podcast της Athens Voice.
Hello and welcome to Nuclear Threat by Putin podcast. We are Andrea Čepić
and Maria Rybachuk. In today's episode, we'll be talking about nuclear threat which Putin posed to Europe and the whole world. And the essence of this podcast is to hear different opinions on this topic and to figure out if the nuclear war is really ahead of us. Could such threats to humanity go unnoticed, or should they be taken seriously?
Today our guests are two professors. The first one is Nicholas Panayotou, Associate Professor of School of Journalism and Mass Media Communication from Aristotle University of Thessaloniki. And the second one is
Triantafylos Akis Karantrantas, Political Sciences, International Relations and Security Studies. We never thought that such topics would be taken up and discussed with full seriousness and at high levels. Until a few months ago, it seemed that this was a prerogative of channels and blogs focusing on conspiracy theories. However, the world is changing, and now the threat of nuclear aggression has indeed arisen over us. Of course, we don't see flying missiles and do not hear warnings, but the danger is already felt.
On February 24th, the day Russia invaded Ukraine, Putin warned that there would be unprecedented consequences if third states attempt to obstruct Russia. Such wording is traditionally considered to imply a threat to use nuclear weapons. Putin went further and commanded to place Russian deterrent forces, which include nuclear weapons, on a special regime of alert. According to Russia's official doctrine, nuclear weapons primarily guarantee the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. In March, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that in the current war, intentional or unintentional, nuclear escalation has once again moved into the realm of possibility. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has also admitted the real possibility of using such weapons and warned the West not to underestimate the elevated risks of conflict over Ukraine. At the same time, Russian state TV says nuclear strike more probable than Kremlin losing Ukraine war. Margarita Simonyan, editor of state broadcaster Russia Today, has made a chilling threat saying that the most incredible outcome that all this will end with a nuclear strike seems more probable to me than the other course of events. Daily Mail, Washington Post, and some other outlets show that their concerns after Russian TV threatened Britain with nuclear missile strike, saying one Sarmat missile and the British Isles will no longer exist.
If we take a brief look at the history, we will see that the first program to create nuclear weapons was launched in Nazi Germany in 1938, but the attempts of scientists ended unsuccessfully. In 1939, the United States founded the Uranium Committee. 3 years later, they have managed to create a bomb within the Manhattan Project. And in 1945, for the first and last time in history, the Americans used nuclear weapons against people. They dropped uranium and plutonium bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This attack prompted the Soviet Union to focus on the development of its nuclear weapons. So, after the Second World War, the USSR and the USA became the most important forces in the world. And the presence of such a dangerous type of weapon in both powers forced them to avoid an armed conflict.
Today, according to the BBC, Russia has 5,997 nuclear warheads and almost the same number falls on NATO countries. The USA, France and Great Britain have together 6,943 nuclear warheads, following by China, Pakistan, India, Israel and North Korea. The issues with Ukraine having nuclear weapon arise after the collapse of the Soviet Union, when Ukraine received the world's third largest stockpile of nuclear weapons after the United States and Russia. It caused concern in the international community because the appearance of another nuclear state on the world map did not correspond to the idea of nuclear disarmament. Therefore, the United States and Russia immediately began negotiations with Ukraine to give up these weapons. As a result, in May 1992, tactical nuclear weapons were taken to Russia. The most memorable document accompanying the nuclear disarmament of Ukraine was the Budapest Memorandum. In the text of this paper, the United States, the UK and Russia welcome Ukraine's accession to treaty on the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons, while pledging to respect its independence and existing borders. The same memorandums were signed by Belarus and Kazakhstan. However, Russian military invasion and the threats to use nuclear weapons raise more serious questions we are going to address to our guest today.
We would start with two small opinion polls we have conducted in Russia and Serbia to figure out if people in these countries believe in the possibility of nuclear weapon usage and if they are aware and afraid of it. We also ask them why does Putin threat. We will present first the answers of Russian people, and I need to make here a small remark. All our participants have no connection with the government or military sector. Also, for security reasons and in order to avoid problems at home, they wish to remain anonymous.
Many Russians were shocked and scared because they didn't know what to expect, what's coming in the next few days. As time progressed, it became clear that Putin and people, like his advisors and environment, are at least aware of what's happening. So they're not completely out of their minds. Clearly, a completely deranged person would start a war with NATO or a nuclear war right now. Our whole planet would be doomed. So there's a huge gap between the war as it unfolds right now and the nuclear war. Right now, the chances are extremely low, but they are not completely zero. So this is what scares people most, I think. So we must do everything possible to make it zero again. For example, what happened if NATO intervened in the conflict explicitly? Or, for example, China launches its offense on the other side of the planet, so it makes this conflict like a global chain of conflicts. Putin is threatening the West, I think, because nuclear weapons is the leverage of threat. It's the main purpose of it. Once the threat is materialized, it's no longer a threat. It cannot be used as an advantage and negotiating. And what bothers me and many Russians, I think, about Putin is not a threat he poses to Europe, but what he's doing to Russia itself and suppressing free will of people in many ways in Russia. So it's a sort of paternalistic attitude towards Russian people. So as if they're like a children, cannot decide what's good.
Vladimir Putin is an extremely experienced player in the foreign policy and military arenas. His main weapon is not tanks, not navy, and not even nuclear bombs. His main weapon is fear, which he has been actively trading for the last 22 years. Nuclear weapons is an ace up his sleeve, but Putin won't put them on table that easily. After a nuclear missile flies, Putin will have no more arguments. But after nuclear strike, the world will stop being afraid and start acting. This will mean the end of Putin. He understands this and skillfully paralyzes the world. So far, the situation in Ukraine, according to Putin, doesn't require the use of nuclear weapons. The death of Ukrainians and Russian soldiers doesn't bother Putin. I doubt the NATO will enter this war. The leaders of Western countries talk about this almost daily. Now Putin's life is not in danger, and his own life and greatness is the only thing that worries Putin. But everything can change. The possibility that Putin will use nuclear weapon is small, but it's not zero. Most people didn't believe that war would begin, but it did. It's the same with nuclear weapons.
As for the usage of nuclear weapons by Russia, I do not believe in it. Theoretically, it might be possible, exceptionally in reaction to the similar stroke of the opponent. Of course, like a sane person, I am against this terrible weapon that is able to destroy every mouse and man. So I'm afraid of circumstances that can harm me and my family. Moreover, it's too hard to predict and avoid these circumstances. In my view, Putin is not more threatening than Biden. All politics is as clear as mud, and we never know what different political figures, including Russians, have in mind.
So, as we see, Russian people are generally concerned and worried about the nuclear threat, and they find it relatively possible. However, they do not think it will happen. Otherwise, Putin does not have any other serious things to use as a threat. But let's see now what Serbian people think.
I believe and hope that there will be no situation where Moscow can use nuclear weapons. I have opinion that these are just statements that aim to frighten the European and world public. There is certainly a possibility, but I believe that such a thing will not happen. I also believe that the countries that have the main political say in the world beyond Russia have the capacity to provide enough weapons if it's necessary. Also, although Russia is a strong energy resource, sanctions coming from all the world and all sides do not go in its favor. I hope that a real and decisive conversation will take place as soon as possible, and it's reasonable people who must lead such negotiations.
All of Putin's actions so far show that he is using all his military strength and weapons to achieve his goal. I think that the use of nuclear weapons is not his way of fighting in this war, but one of the methods of intimidating his opponents. If we consider that there is a possibility of a nuclear war and that Putin is the one who would start it, it would only lead to the self-destruction of him, his people, and the whole world. I don't think that something like this is possible in the near future, nor that this war is the initiator of any form of nuclear war, at least not by the Russian military and Putin himself. I don't think this can be an example of how to conquer territory, and an example that would be a trigger for a less armed force to decide to take such a step. Russia is a strong power. Judging by history, we can say that it's the only one so far that he has dared to take such a drastic step, but all because of the power it possesses in its military ranks. I doubt that any state would decide on such a move in the future and follow Putin's strategy of conquering a certain territory. Some of the countries listed are also strong world powers, but are wary of using their military capabilities as they may fear that conflicts could escalate into perhaps even nuclear war, which no one in this world would like. The European Union is in an awkward position when it comes to the war between Russia and Ukraine. On the one hand, they are still dependent on Russia for gas, and on the other hand, they do not support Putin's interventions in Ukraine. What is important is that the European Union tries to find a balance so that its citizens do not feel the changes due to their support for Ukraine. We have seen the sanctions imposed on Russia by the European Union, but that is only one of the minimums that the European Union has done so far. The faster EU policy makers seek to move away from Russian gas supplies, the greater the potential implications in terms of economic costs. However, European security will rely heavily on US leadership and military capabilities. The EU's ambitions for strategic autonomy encountered a reality check in Ukraine. In terms of hard security, the only game in town for now is NATO. I think the only way out of this war is Putin's agreement with NATO and the demarcation of borders in the region surrounding Russia. An agreement in which a solution will be found for both forces and no one will be at a loss. While this may sound like a dream, it is possible to reach such an agreement if a compromise is made. However, I do not think that only Russia and President Putin are the only ones with whom it is impossible to negotiate. There is also resentment from Zelensky, who stated in one of the press statements that he would always negotiate, but that if Ukraine had been part of NATO before the war, there would have been no war.
And now we are going to hear our experts' opinion. As we said, today our guests are Nicholas Panayotou and Akis Karantrantos. We have asked them what they think about the present situation, in particular, why Putin is using the language of nuclear threat, and if his action could become a catalyst for other conflicts existing in the world. Are there any specific areas which may be threatened? For example, China and Taiwan, Turkey and Greece, or probably Kosovo.
Moreover, we aim to figure out how is the conflict in Ukraine is changing the EU, especially in terms of developing military capabilities with NATO and reducing the energy dependence on Russia.
And eventually, what can be done on the European level to prevent this nuclear threat and to terminate the war in Ukraine? And who and how in this case should negotiate? So, let's get started with Mr. Panayotou.
I don't think that anyone can answer this question, because this means that you have to be a psychologist or a very close friend of a leader. Whatever, though, the threat of using nuclear weapons is something that it shouldn't go unnoticed. It is a threat at the first stage that aims to show the determination in order to proceed with his plan, and it show that he's been determined. So I would rather judge this narrative, but in a symbolic way, what it means. It sends actually, and this is what I hope to state, it shows actually to underline his determination as a leader to succeed his target. Secondly, his determination to protect Russia in case that he is threatened, or in case that things might not turn out as he has planned in Ukraine. And the last thing, I think it is something that the whole world, we thought and we hoped that we left all these elements behind. I think it is too dangerous even to recall this threat in 2022. Actions that are taken solely under the logic that I decide and I execute belongs to centuries ago, especially now that our societies became more connected. Having this type of behavior, it takes the world totally back. I think that this type of actions can justify similar type of behaviors only to the extent that will be proven successful. This is why I think that the rest of the world is fighting against this logic, because they want to underline that it is something else trying to succeed your national interest, and totally different to decide an invasion, like you are owning the whole world. We have to understand that in international relations, among a major element, it is the national interest of each country. This is part of the negotiations. This is part of international relations in general. But what we have managed to succeed up until now is to have an understanding and agreement that this type of aggression and invasion cannot be tolerated. It doesn't mean that it didn't happen in the past, but what it means, it is mostly our determination to move towards a world where we will try to succeed or not, to achieve our national interest through other means rather war. I think that we have to have in mind the following three elements. If I would pick some specific dates, this would be the day that the Berlin Wall collapsed, 11th of September, and now 24th of February 2022. It totally changed the world, because it speed up specific decisions, and among them, it woke up EU from keeping a passive stance. European Union realized that in order actually to achieve its aims, it has to work a lot on securing its energy independency, defense independency, and defense capability. In addition to that, European Union realized that it's not enough only to be an economic superpower. You have to be in the position to translate this economic superpower into military and political means. These were the things that we were missing, and now European Union totally changed. It's not only European Union that changed, but also the whole world. New type of alliances will emerge, while things that have been considered in the past as part of this agreement now collapse. For example, Finland and Sweden are looking forward to join NATO. This is something that has been, let's say, frozen for 60 or 70, from the 40s, actually, till today. Yes, I think that the European Union should work in the following elements, one internally and one externally. Internally means that the European Union should find ways in order to achieve its independence in energy, because as long as you are dependent from someone in energy or in any other sector, it means that you cannot fulfill your policy. Secondly, it has to work in order to address many challenges internally, starting with the new economic era that we are entering. This is very important as well. And externally, in order to be a catalyst in invasion in Ukraine, it has to show determination, it has to show support in Ukraine, and it has to provide the means that it will help Russian civil society to understand the consequences of that type of conflict. It has to work with elements from all over the world in order to stop this invasion.
And now we are going to continue with Mr. Karatrantos, whom we have asked the similar questions.
Paul, we need to have in our minds that the main argument on behalf of Russia and Vladimir Putin concerning the intervention in Ukraine, it's the argument that the possible entrance of Ukraine to NATO and the transfer of military means from Western countries to Ukraine, it could be a possible threat for Russia's national security. So this is their argument, this is their perception. And that's why they legitimize from their side the use of military force. And I will say this because according to the officials, either Vladimir Putin or other representatives of Russia, for example, Dmitry Medvedev, representing the National Security Council, or even the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Sergei Lavrov, they are stating that we're engaged in a military operation. So we have, apart from Ukraine, a variable of Western influence, so there are EU countries and NATO member countries that are supporting Ukraine in military means, so they are providing them military equipment. So this is changing the nature of the dispute in Ukraine, and it is somehow posing a major threat than Ukraine themselves for Russia's national security. And this is finally leading them to describe the means that have in their position and they could probably use if we have a further escalation. So according to their argument, if things are getting bad in the case of the military intervention due to other reasons, for example, the role of the Western countries and NATO in supporting Ukraine, this could legitimize the escalation on behalf of Russia for the use of more heavily weapons and as the last resort, nuclear weapons. Nobody is in favor to use nuclear arms because there will be a reaction with nuclear arms. This is the very thin red line that keeps the war cold and not hot enough in order to have this framework. So at the moment, how possible is the use of nuclear arms from Russia? We need to have in our minds different parameters, first of all. So the first parameter is if President Putin and the other leaders, political or military leaders of Russia, are deciding based on rationality and based on cost effectiveness situation. There is something in common between Russia, China, Turkey, or Serbia. You mentioned those four countries. There are countries that they have a different understanding about democracy. There is two countries that they have dependencies with other countries based on energy, based on commerce, based on economy in general. So this is the most important thing there. But they have a different perception about what we call it liberal world order. The liberal world order is the official narrative as the outcome of the Cold War. Based on this ideology, we have the development of a new global governance scheme. So based on international institutions for Russia and China, there is an alternative description of the world. And this description is that there is not only the liberal world order. So as an alternative to the modernization of the West, there is the traditionalism of Russia and China based on cultural values, on ancient cultural values or medieval cultural values, for example, their global world vision. There is not enough space for human rights. There is not enough space for civil society organizations. There is not enough space even for independent media platforms. So we have the cases with the dispute between China and Google. We have the cases with the dispute between Russia and many independent Western mass media in this situation, or issues linked with, for example, mass gatherings or the expression of a different opinion against the opinion of the states. So there is a possibility to have a bloc, an alliance between Russia and China, because Turkey is another point of discussion. And if we have this kind of an alliance, so that would be a kind of traditionalist bloc or an Eastern bloc, an opposite to West, the next day could be a bloc between Russia and China, so a new version of the Cold War. China and Russia have two permanent seats in the United Nations Security Council. So they are very important countries in every important decision. If we have this outcome, so a bloc, so this could be a bloc that could lead us to a new Cold War and different cases of military disputes, limited or not limited, in different regions across the world. Also very important, the case of Serbia, because Russia is present and has an important influence in Western Balkans, and mainly in Serbia, where we have issues in the case of Kosovo, that they have a common understanding or a common narrative between the narrative of Russia in the case of Ukraine, for example, the annexation of Crimea, or all this discussion about possible referendums in the Donbass places, so for example, in Donetsk or Luhansk. So this frame that actually there is a presence of a Serbian-backed minority there or in Bosnia, and how we can lead this situation, or from the other side of the story, an Albanian minority to another country in the Western Balkans. So this could lead us to the situation where the protection of minorities is actually a decision that we have to take seriously in our consideration, and not that there are instrumentalized, there are different countries instrumentalizing, using minorities as an attempt to legitimize a possible intervention. So the case of Kosovo is a possible hotbed that could be an outbreak. We have a completely new terrain in the world, not only in the EU. So first time we have a reference to EU as a security provider, and this is very, very important. So we have a shift in narrative, which is very important because we're describing about institutional narrative. So this leads to a new strategic understanding. Before Ukraine, before the invention of Russia, the main idea concerning EU defense and security was the so-called strategic autonomy. So we need to be autonomous, we need to build our military capabilities in order to back our soft power with possible use of hard power where is necessary. Keep in mind that EU is a normative power actor, so it's mainly based on international law, based on negotiations, based on attractiveness and not on hard power. But the energy dependence is also a very, very important parameter. The energy autonomous Europe is another strategic aim, going hand in hand actually with strategic autonomy in terms of military capabilities. But it is not that easy because actually the plan was to reach an important level of independence close to 2030. But now they are speeding up decisions in order to achieve this or something close to this level of autonomy close to 2023. So in this case, we have the agreements with United States with using liquid gas and also the bargains with different countries in the MENA region in order to fund a more multilateral scheme of energy providing, not only that unilateral as in the case of Russia, including the US LNG, gas and oil from the MENA region, also the advanced use of renewable energy sources, and of course the other side of the story, which is the more sophisticated use of power from European citizens, which we don't discuss for years, the concept that we're dependent to countries where their leaders are not that democratic as possible, so they're playing the card of dependence as they want in this case. So it's another kind of warfare, to be honest. And we're describing and discussing a lot about Russia's hybrid warfare. There, the energy blackmail, it is due to the energy dependence, it is part of the pressure. So that's why they are using this pressure in order to break the cycle of the Western countries and to avoid tougher sanctions. We have official statements from European Union's representatives, so the so-called trilogue, so from the European Council, the European Commission, and the European Parliament, and also from the President of the United States and other important politicians, leaders of EU member states and NATO member states, that the use of nuclear arms is a red line that Russia should not cross in this dimension. Because if there is a use of nuclear arms, that could be a reaction. So, of course, there are preparedness plans, there are contingency plans, because nuclear arms was part of the so-called weapons of mass destruction. They're not only nuclear, but there are also biological weapons or chemical weapons. And there are existing plans concerning how to avoid an attack, how to respond to this attack. So there are preparation plans. So first is making clear to Russia that there would be a reaction. You can see that Western officials are not actually phrasing nuclear armed, but they're phrasing proper reaction in this situation. So first, secondly, there are contingency plans, there are preparation plans that they're existing there from the period of 2001 after the 9/11 and the possible reaction and use of weapons of mass destruction. And of course, there are new plans in different frameworks in this situation in order to avoid the use of nuclear arms.
So we are very thankful to our guests. And Andrea, after everything we have heard and learned today from our guest, what is your personal opinion?
Humanity faces three catastrophic, if not existential, threats: a pandemic, climate change, and now nuclear war. Yet, a nuclear event would be a global game changer, and the risk of death have risen to their highest level since the Cuba missile crisis. Russia will respond immediately, and the consequences will be such as you have never seen in your entire history, said Putin in one of the speeches on national television. I order the defense minister and the chief of the general staff of the Russian armed forces to put the deterrence forces of the Russian army into a special mode of combat service, Putin said in a televised address. Although the White House has said that the Americans or anyone in the world don't need to be concerned about a potential nuclear war, Putin managed to cast doubt on the impossibility of this move. Examining and collecting statements from officials from the United States, the European Union, and other countries around the world, it can be concluded that Putin's threat has so far proved to be another military move behind attempt to intimidate rival military forces. Of course, this threat to Putin is just not intimidation, but also the demonstration of the power of the Russian military force, which, according to him, is ready to do anything to achieve the ultimate goal. But Putin's threats did not deter Washington and many NATO governments from interfering in Moscow's attempt to overthrow the Zelensky government in many other ways, short of direct combat with the Russians. And not to forget the thing that the Russia's nuclear doctrine, which Putin himself approved as recently as 2020, states that the country would only resort to nuclear strikes in one of four cases. The first one is when ballistic missiles were fired at Russia or an ally's territory. The second one is when an enemy used nuclear weapons in response to an attack on Russian nuclear weapons site, or in response to an attack threatening the very existence of the Russian state. None of this is the case in the war against Ukraine. But still, we don't know how the situation will unfold. No one for sure could know the right answer except Putin himself.
As we have seen in recent months, Putin plays the red nuclear button in his hands like the keys to an expensive car. Threats follow one after another, both from him and from his propagandist supporters. Perhaps all this was done in order to mentally prepare the Russians for the defeat of their army in Ukraine, and to reduce the degree of discontent of the society, which will exhale with relief that even if the war is lost, the main thing is that the nuclear weapon was not used. Putin is bragging about the nuclear arsenal to the West to keep it from expanding its involvement in the war and sending Ukraine advanced weapons that would give the Ukrainian military an advantage. I also agree with Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, who has suggested that Russia's nuclear blackmail stems from Moscow's disbelief that the international community can hold war crimes accountable for those who hide behind the power of a nuclear state. In any case, any threats and even ephemeral allusions to the use of nuclear warheads cannot be tolerated by any country in the world, and such position must be clearly delivered to the Russian leadership. In the 21st century, the language of power is economics and trade, not weapons and explosions. We should also not forget about nuclear parity between Russia and NATO. That is, both sides have enough strength to completely destroy each other, and it has been holding back a military conflict since Soviet times. What's more, such threats seem like an advantage of Putin, but once he implements them, what is left? Nuclear weapons are his last argument, after which he will no longer have any escape routes or alternative. However, despite all the arguments, I cannot be sure. Even the smallest possibility of nuclear war is catastrophic and could be fatal. Almost no one believed in the possibility of war, but it has been our reality for many months now. Therefore, even if it might seem absurd, we still cannot be sure of the security and predict the decisions that Putin would make.
Throughout history, noted military leaders, war veterans, and statesmen, and many others, have had a lot to say about the war. Their strong worded quotes that we have been picked for our podcast are sending the message about patriotism, bravery, and sacrifice. These quotes are a message to our listeners and to all people in the world to keep in mind what war can do to humanity. The tragedy of war is that it uses men's best to do men's worst, said one of the war veterans.
John F. Kennedy once said that mankind must put the end to war before the war puts an end to mankind. In addition, we would like to end our podcast with a part of the speech that Charlie Chaplin made in the Great Dictator movie.
We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way.
Thank you for listening, especially to our guest interviewers. We are Andrea Čepić
and Marie Rybačuk. See you soon.
Ήταν ένα podcast από την Athens Voice. Μπορείτε να ακούσετε τα podcast της Athens Voice στο athensvoice.gr και στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcast και το Google Play Music.